Decisions made by major corporations have a greater impact on today's global health than the collective efforts of doctors, scientists, and policymakers, according to our next guest. While other books have addressed parts of this story, the new book, Lethal But Legal, Corporations, Consumption, and Protecting Public Health, is the first to connect the dots between unhealthy products, business-dominated politics, and the growing burdens of disease and healthcare costs. Focusing on the food, tobacco, alcohol, pharmaceutical, gun, and automobile industries, public health expert Nicholas Freudenberg shows how today's corporations are increasingly free to make decisions that benefit their bottom line at the expense of public health. Nicholas Freudenberg is Distinguished Professor of Public Health at the City University of New York School of Public Health and at Hunter College. It's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
A delight to have you here. When it comes to this overall subject, when did you start to focus in on it?
Well, I've spent many years developing community health programs with community organizations. And what I discovered over the years is that almost every time we were making some progress in confronting, whether it was diabetes or asthma or childhood lead poisoning, we'd come up against some special interests, often corporations, whose bottom line was threatened by our efforts to protect public health. And so I wanted to understand better how it is that a few hundred big corporations could have such an outsized influence on health. And that's what led me to do the research and write this book.
As I mentioned in the introduction, there are several different industries that you look at in the book. Is there a through line? Is there a commonality to those?
Yes, I think those are consumer products, automobiles, alcohol, firearms, food and beverage, pharmaceuticals, that are the mainstays of the global consumer economy. And it's the consumer economy, what ordinary people buy, that really drives the global economy. And in addition to that, those products and the practices of their industry are the main causes of the leading killers today: chronic diseases, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, stroke, and injuries, especially from automobiles and firearms, which are taking a growing toll, especially among young people around the world. And the third reason, the commonality I found in these three, is they've actually been well-researched, and there's a growing body of evidence showing how the practices of corporations on marketing and product design and retailing contribute to health problems, but I thought they hadn't been pulled sufficiently together to help ordinary people understand it and then influence policy to change the balance between corporations and government.
When it comes to the legalities of the second part of the title of But Legal, the fact that they are legal, are there commonalities in that as well, that the same arguments apply often?
Yes, and I think what manufacturers say is, well, our product is legal so that you can't limit our activities in any way. But to my mind, that isn't a compelling argument, that the responsibility of government is to protect the public's health against threats that are often hard to act on at the individual level. And in the recommendations I make, I look for ways that the public and government acting together could better protect our well-being.
I want to discuss that in a moment, but obviously wrong and legal are two very different words here.
Yes, but I think if we look at the history of the United States over the last century or so, we see many different moments between the power of market and the power of government. And we've seen periods in the 60s and 70s and the beginning of the 20th century when the public and reformers and researchers joined together to win greater public protections. And so I think what we've seen in the last few decades is a shifting of what's legal to benefit corporations at the expense of public health. And I'm calling for a reexamination of that dividing line. Everybody agrees that government has some role in protecting public health. And I think we've shifted too far to the right in turning over responsibility for well-being to people who are out to make a profit, and that's their job, but government's job is to protect public health.
And as you point out in the book, this is a worldwide problem. This is happening across the globe.
That's right. The report a year or so ago by the World Health Organization identified tobacco, alcohol, and high-fat, sugar, and salt foods as the primary drivers of chronic diseases, which now account for 6 in 10 deaths around the world. And so even in countries where infectious diseases like malaria, TB, and HIV are still big problems, chronic diseases are a growing cause of ill health and also a growing threat to productivity and the economies of the developing world.
So when you write about governments around the world, certainly here in this country, stepping back and privatizing services and taking regulations and making them a bit weaker, cutting funding for protections and testing, the reason for that is solely fiscal, or are there other reasons afoot?
No, I think what I found in the research I did for the book was that beginning in the early 1970s, corporations and business really launched an offensive. Much of its activities described in a memo by Lewis Powell, who worked for the Chamber of Commerce and then became a Supreme Court justice. And he urged business to take a much more aggressive stance. And they were responding to some of the successes of the consumer and environmental and other movements of the 60s and 70s, which had really won new protections, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Environmental Protection Agency. And businesses were becoming concerned that their right to make profits without government oversight were being threatened. And so they began a counteroffensive. And I think they've been remarkably successful in shifting the public discussion and the debate. They've also used their money to buy influence in our government. And I think that's another reason why this problem has gotten so serious, is that they've undermined our democracy, limiting the ability of ordinary people to participate in the political process and leaving so many decisions to the lobbyists and the corporate managers.
You do this at length in the book, but I'm hoping you can give us an example or two of specific efforts where industries have knowingly compromised the health of the public.
Yes, I think McDonald's and other fast food companies have looked to find ways to increase their ability to sell their high-fat, sugar, and salt food. So McDonald's talks about the fourth meal. One of their slogans is, "The moon is full, you should be too." And so in a country where more than half the population is overweight and obese, McDonald's is trying to convince people to eat a third, fourth, and fifth meal at the fast food outlets. Now, this is perfectly legal. They're looking to drive business, but in so doing, they're condemning people to the heart diseases and diabetes that will put a big burden on society and on these individuals.
Ultimately, though, and you write about this, I think, very beautifully in the book, about why companies ultimately should care about public health more than their bottom line. The point you make in the book is that ultimately, that if this goes on, it hurts the bottom line, right? I mean, it will come back to haunt them at some point.
Well, I think certainly they need to worry, as the tobacco industry is, about killing off their market.
That, right.
You know, many smokers are dying prematurely as a result of their habits. But I think it's not something that businesses can decide for themselves. They often say, let us do the regulation and we'll look for things that are good for business and good for health. But I think their job is, in fact, to make a profit. And it's a public responsibility to make sure they do that in a way that doesn't jeopardize the well-being of our population. And so I think in some cases, they're products that can both make money and promote health. But what we've seen in the last few decades is too often the development of blockbuster products, things like SUVs or drugs that turn out to have serious side effects. And business managers have cut corners to promote these products because they bring in high profits, but at the expense of public health.
Nicholas Freudenberg is our guest. The title of his book is Lethal But Legal: Corporations, Consumption, and Protecting Public Health, which is published by Oxford. When you think about these particular corporate efforts and what they're doing, why is regulation so difficult and become so weakened, especially when these corporations become more political in the process?
Well, I think there are two fronts where corporations have been successful. One is the political front, where they've used their dollars really to have undue influence in Congress, the Supreme Court, the executive branch, through the revolving door, where something like 44% of the lobbyists are now people who've left Congress or left government employee. And so they buy off experienced government insiders and use them to undermine government. But I think the other reason for their success is ideological. They have been successful in convincing at least some part of the population of the line that Ronald Reagan made famous, that government is the problem, not the solution. And many people believe that only individuals are responsible for their health. But I think what folks in public health believe is that individuals will make healthy decisions when those are the easy decisions. And unfortunately, through their marketing and retail practices and product design, too often the unhealthy choice is the easy choice. And that's where I think public policy can come in. To give just an example, every year the alcohol, tobacco, and food industry spend about $25 billion trying to convince us to consume products that we know put us at risk of premature death and preventable illness. That's more than twice what the U.S. spends for all the CDC services. And that's crazy. It doesn't make sense. As a society, we can't afford, it's not sustainable, to spend more on promoting disease than we do on protecting health.
You present in the book the building blocks for a movement. You have a chapter entitled Optimism, Past, Present, and Future. And as you alluded to earlier, this is an important point to make, that ultimately you are optimistic that people can turn this around.
Yes, and I'm optimistic for two reasons, as you said. One is the past, that we've seen around the turn of the century with the progressive movement, again in the 60s and 70s with the environmental and consumer movements, that when ordinary citizens, honest elected officials, scientists, reformers get together, we can see big progress. Look at the progressive movement and Upton Sinclair's book, The Jungle, which really transformed the food industry and made our food much safer. And the other reason, the current reason for optimism, I think many people want to be sure that their children aren't at risk of terrible chronic diseases, want food that is healthy and affordable. And mostly now those people are organizing at their local and state levels. And I think we're learning very important lessons from that. And the task for the future is to try and bring those groups together, people working on food, on tobacco, on automobiles and transportation. And in the book, I suggest some strategies, some policy agenda items that could help to bring that weaving together of this activism.
Such as?
So I think the first thing is that we need to impose much higher standards on corporations for informing the public about what they know about the health consequences of their products and disclosing what's in their records. We saw that the tobacco industry spent decades hiding from the public what they knew about the harmful effects of their products. And I worry that the food industry and the alcohol industry and the gun industry and the automobile industry has similar facts in their files, and we shouldn't have to wait 50 years to find out and to save all the lives that could be prevented by acting on that now. We need tougher law enforcement and tougher laws. I also think we've allowed for too long companies to pass on to consumers and taxpayers the cleanup costs for the messes they make, the healthcare costs. We saw with the tobacco industry that forcing them to reimburse states for the medical expenses put a big dent in their profits. Unfortunately, they responded to that by promoting their products in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, which I think explains why we need to act globally as well as locally. But I think by making it less easy for companies to externalize the damaging health consequences will make it for healthier products. And finally, I think we need to level the political playing field. As long as corporations can use their muscle to have an undue influence on Congress, the Supreme Court, local and state governments, ordinary people are going to have a hard time speaking out for their health and their children's health. And so by changing the lobbying, campaign finance, revolving door laws, we'll be better able to restore the democracy that I think is such an important part of America.
One of the things, in getting back to what you were talking about of optimism, especially in the past, is that there have been very successful efforts by the public to hold corporations responsible for the harm that they caused, that was caused by their products or a lack of oversight. Again, going back to my original question about commonalities, what do you think there is common in those efforts, and what do we need to expand upon to make that almost the golden rule?
Yes, I think one thing in common in those efforts is the notion that people have a right to health. You know, that in the 19th and early 20th century, that right translated into clean water, sanitation, food that wasn't infected. And that now became a standard in the United States, and we still have to be vigilant in protecting that. I think the public health standards for the 21st century are food that doesn't make us sick, products that have been adequately tested. And so I think those are very, they're common sense. And when we can start to overcome the ideas that corporations spend so much of their money marketing and putting forth, we'll be able to succeed in putting those common sense ideas into the political discussion.
And I guess that's what's so frustrating is that it is common sense. You know, which also puts into the issue of the bottom line that we need to be smarter as consumers as well.
Yes, and you know, people talk a lot about individual responsibility, and of course, individuals are the ones who decide to light up that cigarette or have that extra drink,
right,
or you know, consume the high-fat, sugar, salt food. But I think if we want individuals to be responsible, if we want parents to be responsible, then we also have to demand that corporations assume their responsibility. And marketing aggressively, especially to children and young people, products that we know are going to cause illness, to my mind, that isn't responsible. Looking to persuade Congress to roll back laws that protect public health, that isn't responsible. So I think we need to put forth a new code of responsibility. Individual responsibility, yes, but also corporate responsibility and government responsibility to assume the mantle of protecting public well-being, which I think is one of its most basic responsibilities.
It's hard not to read the book, and yes, there's a lot of optimism in it. There's a tremendous amount of optimism in the book. However, it is hard to read it and not get mad that people are getting filthy rich over us getting sick.
Yes, yes, and especially, you know, putting the health of our children and grandchildren at risk.
Right.
You know, some researchers a few years ago estimated that if current trends in obesity and diabetes continued, our children and grandchildren would have shorter lifespans than the current generation. And what a terrible legacy to leave to future generations, to reverse more than a century of public health progress. And yet we know very clearly that the sugary beverages of the soda companies, the high-fat fast food of the McDonald's and Burger King's, are contributing to obesity and diabetes and heart disease. And we just need to ask ourselves as parents and citizens what we can do to create a different political environment that will not make that morally acceptable or politically acceptable.
And it does involve us getting madder.
That's right. And I think I talk in the book about many campaigns, some of them successful, some less successful, that have succeeded in mobilizing people. So I think we have good examples of the potential for that. And if we can find ways for bringing some of those groups together, then I think we can see even greater success.
The name of the book is Lethal But Legal: Corporations, Consumption, and Protecting Public Health. It's by Nicholas Freudenberg and published by Oxford. Professor Freudenberg, thank you very much for spending time with us. I do appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Lethal But Legal, published by Oxford. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.